Hare Krishna. Welcome. Nice to see you again. On the 27th of this month, October, we celebrate the disappearance day of our founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And that's when he left our midst, physically speaking. He never actually left. And so, since next week is Govardhan Puja, which is a big day on the Vaishnava calendar, so we've moved this forward. Normally I would give, or oftentimes I have given Govardhan Puja lectures, talks, but I thought I'll speak on Prabhupada today because that's pertinent, relevant. I had the honor and the great good fortune of being initiated myself by Prabhupada when he was present on the planet. I came to Krishna consciousness 1972. I got my first initiation in 73, and I got my second initiation in 75. Prabhupada was present at both initiations. The first one took place in New Vrindavan, in West Virginia, farm community, and the second one took place in Chicago, in Illinois. So, I'm calling this talk Bhaktivedanta Swami, A Simple Man, An Extraordinary Life. And I'd like to divide the talk into two parts. First, I'd like to tell you a little bit of history, Prabhupada. I know you know a lot about him. Many of you do. So I thought I'd cover some of the things maybe you don't know. And in the second part, I'm just going to give you some anecdotes from my God brothers and God sisters who were there from the very beginning, much, much sooner than I was. Prabhupada arrived in America in 1965, September. It took him about a year and a half to establish himself, if you want to call it that. It was very hard going. Very, very difficult. For most of us, no offense, most of us would not have been able to do it. Not at 69 years old. Think not. We would just, you know, give up and go home. And no one would criticize. Why would they? So, Prabhupada was born September 1st, 1896. That's not this century. It wasn't the previous century. It was the one before. 1896. You don't hear too many people, if it were speaking in common parlance, you start talking about somebody who's born in 1896. Oh, you mean a historical figure? No, not really. I just mean Prabhupada. He's pretty pertinent. Even today. He was born in Calcutta, Kolkata. And the day was Nandotsava, the Utsava, the celebration of Nanda Maharaj for Krishna. Krishna had been born, not in 1896. Okay, let's get that clear. Krishna had been born 5,000 years earlier in Vrindavan, actually in Mathura. Not in Vrindavan. And so Nanda Maharaj, the father of Krishna, what do you call it? What kind of father?
Foster father.
Thank you. Of Krishna, was celebrating. You have a big day. When the child's born, you celebrate, and it's kind of like a coming out of sorts. And you speak with the Jyotishi, the astrologer. He explains the birth chart. Not everything in detail. some things out in front of everybody gathered at the party, at the event. Said some nice things. Doesn't say everything. And at that time, the name is chosen. The name is not given at that time. Not typically. And this is generally 10 days after the birth. How will you name the child without knowing who the soul is? How? What do you mean, how? We picked the names before the baby came out. Yeah, I know. We do it in the Western world. How do you know who that soul is? Well, what do you mean? Just what I said. You don't. That's what the birth chart, the astrological horoscope, is about. It tells you who it is. I'm here. Oh, you again. Back again in this lifetime. So, those things were determined. And anyway, Prabhupada was born on the day that this celebration was followed each year. As a child, Prabhupada recalled that every morning he would wake up to the sound of the arati bell ringing. And his father would be doing the puja, offering the arati ceremony to the deity on the altar in the home. And bowing down, doing his pranams to Krishna, to God, in the home. Every home should have an altar? No. Every home must have an altar. Must have an altar. I don't care what religion you belong to. It doesn't matter what manifestation of God you believe in. Every home must have an altar. Where will you keep the sacred space? Where do you keep the sacred energy? Where do you sit when you meditate? In front of your altar. At the foot of God. At the foot of the gods. Some people just have little crystals and rocks on their altar. Still an altar. So, that's the sound he woke up to. His father was Gaur Mohan Day. Surname was Day. D-E. And his mother, Rajini, named him Abhay Charan. Abhay Charan. What does Abhay mean? This is called an Abhaya Mudra. What does it mean?
Fearless.
So, one who is fearless having taken shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. How do you become fearless? Take shelter of God. You don't believe me? Test it out. That's how you become fearless. Because wherever you turn in this world, my friends, it's fearful. What if this happens? What if that happens? What if this doesn't happen? What if that doesn't happen? Oh my God, I'm riddled with fear. The only way you're going to get unriddled is by being close to God. It's the only way. So it was a very apt name for Prabhupada, because that man is fearless. He is afraid of nothing. I saw him in many situations. I was not one of the so-called big devotees, the important characters at the time. I had a service that I thought was pretty special and pretty important, but still, I couldn't get in. It's hard to break into the inner circle. They had him so well guarded and protected that, you know, you'd have to show your papers. No, I'm kidding. But I didn't have as much personal association with Prabhupada. I had some, not a lot. So the astrologer did the horoscope for Abhay Charan Day, and the family was very happy with the auspicious consultation or reading that they received. And the astrologer at Prabhupada's birth made a specific prediction. And the prediction was that when this child reached the age of 70, he would cross the ocean He would become a great exponent of spirituality, and he'd open 108 temples around the world. That's what he said when he was a babe in swaddling clothes. Not bad. Did he do that? Oh, yes, he did. Well, you can say, yeah, but he was 69. This guy said 70. Pretty good. Pretty close. I'm impressed. He did that. He did exactly that. Now, I have a lot of clients that tell me, oh my God, you know, I'm not happy in my job, I'm not happy in my profession, and I'm just, you know, what can I do? I'm too old to change. I said, how old are you? 42. 42, huh? Really getting up there now. If you're not doing your dharma, if you're not doing your life purpose, if you're not acting in harmony with your nature, with your God-given gifts, then what are you doing? What are you doing? Well, I work for JCPenney. Fine. You doing retail? Yes. Do you love retail? I love retail. Perfect. I hate retail. Oh, then what are you doing? I have a job. I pay my bills. Okay. No argument. I do not hope that you will spend 20 years, 30 years, or 40 years doing a job that you don't like. Because that means we're not doing our dharma. We're not doing our purpose in life. Not good. All right? Okay. So Prabhupada did his purpose. He was a late bloomer. That's what I was going to say. What's a late bloomer? A late bloomer is somebody who really comes into his own after what age, roughly? Do you know? 40, roughly. What do you mean? I'm not going to be able to figure it all out before I'm 40? Oh, you'll figure out lots of stuff, but you may still not yet be doing your purpose. I realized what my purpose was at the age of 33. I had an awakening at 19. I became a devotee at 22, 23. I realized what my life purpose was at age 33. And when did I start doing my life purpose? 39, 40. Well, why didn't you start sooner? Because I had a job and I was paying the bills. You know, practical. We're real. This is the real world. Well, they say it is. It's the illusory world. But it's the real illusory world. The bills must be paid. Right? So there's no criticism there. Right? But we're not here to pay bills, friends. We are not here to pay bills. That is not the meaning of life. And if you think all your time is dedicated to paying bills, we need to do some sort of restructuring. Okay? You're welcome for that little piece of advice, in case you had not yet realized it. Correct? I want you to be happy. Prabhupada wants you really to be happy, and Krishna absolutely can't wait for you to be happy. Okay, I'll never get through these notes if I keep waxing eloquent here. So when Prabhupada was 1.5 years old, he fell sick with typhoid fever. And the doctor came, family doctor, and of course his father, his parents were Vaishnavas. Vaishnava means worshipper or follower of Vishnu. We are Vaishnavas here. And then you might say, yeah, I thought you followed Krishna. We do follow Krishna. And Krishna and Vishnu are the same person. Vishnu is usually in a forearm form. Krishna is in a two-arm form. We see Krishna as the source of the Godhead. So the family doctor said, oh, there's only one thing that's going to cure him from typhoid, and that's chicken broth. In America, that's like kind of an in-joke, you know. It's a real Jewish thing. All you need to eat some chicken soup. You'll feel better. That's how they say it in New York. Right? very common. So his father said, no, we don't eat chicken soup. We're vegetarian, strict vegetarian. This is the only thing that will help him. Says who? But anyway, they brought the chickens. I will make it at my house, the doctors. I'll bring it. He brings it. Well, he fed it to Prabhupada. I immediately threw it up. I think that's as close as he got to meat in his life. Okay, that didn't work. Okay, I'll get that out of here. Anyway, he recovered, right? He said, if you don't feed it to him, he will die. Well, he lived. So here's the good news. Okay. His father had a clothing business or a cloth business. In India, they would say more like a cloth business. And with cloth, you can make whatever you need. You know, you go buy, choose your cloth, and then the seamstress would sew up whatever you like. Still today in India, it's like that, many places. And so he'd leave his shop at night, and he'd set in the middle of the floor a bowl of rice before he left. Why would he do that? So the rats would eat the rice and not the cloth. So, you know, ingenious. It worked, apparently. And then he'd come home and he would read Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Purana, Chaitanya Charitamrita, which are books that are integral part of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So this is, 1900 back then. He would sit and he would chant on his japa beads. He would chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, just like you were doing. And that's what he would do. And Prabhupada said, my father said, God has 10 hands. If God decides to bless you and benedict you, he will give with 10 hands. How will you receive? You only have 2. You can hardly receive anything. When God decides to take from you, take things away from you, don't forget he has 10 hands. You only have 2 to hang on. You're going to lose some stuff. One of the most common names for God is Hari. Hari means one who takes away. That's what it means. So as materialists, we think, yes, that's God. One who takes away all my anxieties and my fear and my suffering and my sorrow. That's Hari. Yes. Does he only operate in that way? No. As a spiritual person, he may take away everything from you. You say, I lost my job. I lost my relationship. I lost my car. I don't know. And it's all, these are all terrible things. Well, sort of, on the face of it. Maybe your prayers, but I want to become closer to you. I want to come close to you. Please, please help me. Help me to learn to love you and come close to you. Okay, well, let's just move some stuff out of the way so we can make that happen. Oh, I didn't ask for that. I thought you wanted to become close to me. Now, I'm not saying it only happens that way, because it happens any way you can imagine, every which way. But that too is Hari. One who takes away. Where do you think the name Harry comes from? Okay. Prabhupada said his father would go to work, but and he would sell cloth. He'd go in the afternoon and then in the evening. In India, very often you go in the evening to shop because of the heat, So afternoon, late afternoon, evening, morning is also for shop trading hours. But he says, my father's business is mostly puja, worship. That was his first business, maintaining a shop. That was later. So Prabhupada grew up from birth in a very God-conscious household. And oftentimes sadhus or holy people, or some semblance of holy people, would come by and visit. And Prabhupada said they had up to 4 or 5 guests a day. They were right in central Calcutta, or north central Calcutta. I mean, right in the middle of it. Prabhupada often referred to himself as a Calcutta man. I'm a Calcutta man. Born and raised in Calcutta, like you may be a Dublin man, you know, born and raised. You may, or as they say here, you're a dub. So, he would ask, Gaur Mohan Day would ask the sadhus, please bless my son so that Srimati Radharani, Krishna's consort, may be pleased with him and grant him her blessings. That was his prayer. He wanted Prabhupada to become a God-conscious person. More than anything. That's what he wanted. That was his prayer. And he was on that level of God consciousness. And Rath Yatra ceremony, you know, the chariot festival, the big cart festival that they have it every year here in the summer, no. And around the world. It's now around the world. How did it get around the world? Prabhupada spread it around the world. So even as a child they had a little cart for him, and he would pull the cart with a string or something or other down the street. And they would chant and pull Jagannath and Baladev and Subhadra in the Rath Yatra cart. Okay. There were two good schools in Calcutta at that time, and one of them was Scottish Churches College. And this is during the time of the Raj, when the British occupied India. Now the Irish know this very, very well, what it means to be occupied by the British, because you guys tolerated that for some 800 years, which I'd say that's fairly tolerant, wouldn't you? Maybe overly tolerant in some ways. Anyway, so the British occupied, and the Scottish Churches was all men of the cloth, priests from, I guess, Church of England, and they were the teachers. But it was a very good school and a very high standard of education, and he was taught in English, and he finished the final exams to get his BA, his Bachelor of Arts degree, which he did not go and collect, even though the exam was passed. He did not go to officially get the presentation of his degree. So subsequently, he never actually possessed the degree. Why did he not do that?
Gandhi's movement?
Yeah, because of Gandhi's movement. He became a follower of Mahatma Gandhi, whose goal was to drive the British out of India. I won't get into all that, because that would be a whole lecture in itself. But anyway, that's what happened. So he became, a Republican, nationalist. All right. So he could have possibly sent Prabhupada to go to school in London, but he knew if he went to London, he would get contaminated by Western thought, Western conditioning, behaviors. It's very common. You become like whom you associate with, do you not? Why are we all sitting here associating with each other? Because we're trying to raise ourselves up. Right? That's why we want to associate with people of higher consciousness. So he did not want his child to go to London. So it all worked out well from that point of view. Prabhupada joined Gandhi's freedom movement or liberation movement at age 24. He met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, his guru, in our line at age 26. And he took initiation from Bhaktisiddhanta when he was 36. First initiation. And Bhaktisiddhanta told him at that time, if you ever get any money, you know, besides to maintain your family, print books. So you can share this knowledge of God consciousness, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, to raise consciousness by the simple method of chanting Hare Krishna, the names of God, which is the Dharma, the Yuga Dharma, the Dharma for this age. This is the easiest way to approach God in this particular age, when 98% of the people are not interested in spirituality. Okay. Prabhupada, because he didn't accept his degree, his father found him a position with a man that he knew, and he somehow or other got into the pharmaceutical business. And he had his own pharmacy, and he was selling pharmaceutical products, going from place to place. This was the main thing he did throughout his life. As a householder, he had gotten married, and he had, I don't know how many kids he had, do you know? 4 or 5. And so to maintain his family, he lived in different cities in India, traveled around a bit. And that's what he did. Whereas Bhaktisiddhanta's other disciples were sannyasis or renunciates or lifelong brahmacharis, and they were just living in the ashram and, you know, doing priestly things. So Prabhupada stayed with his family and did all that as a householder, which is fine. Then the older he got, you know, it's really interesting. You know, I talk about doing the Dharma. Do your Dharma. Do what you've come here to do. Do your purpose. Even materially speaking, do your Dharma. If you do your Dharma according to Bhagavad Gita, even that will get you out of the material world. If you do your Dharma and you're attentive to your duty. It won't necessarily get you close to God, but it could get you out of the material world. It's true. So here was Prabhupada doing his pharmaceutical dharma. How'd that go? It didn't go very well. I mean, it did, and then it didn't, then sort of it did, then didn't. And he, now, this statement he makes here, I've seen this, I've heard this so many times. He said, I thought, let me first of all become a rich man, then I shall do this Dharma. You know how many times I've heard that? Since I've been in my early 20s. First, I will become wealthy, I will establish myself materially, financially, then I will do my Dharma. Guess whose mouth it came out of? My own. Was that me? Did I just say that? Yeah, you did. And him and him and him and this one, that. They all said it. Now, if this thing you're doing to become a wealthy person is part of your Dharma, okay, maybe that's going to work. Well, did Prabhupada become a wealthy man? As a pharmaceutical guy, he even started his own factory at one stage. Did he? No, he didn't. He ended up in debt. So much for the, let me become a wealthy man and then I'll do my Dharma. Because what was his dharma? His dharma was the same as it was all along. Does your dharma change? No. You can do different things within the context of your dharma, but it has to be reflected in the essence of your being. Prabhupada, even as a child, refused to take medicines. He didn't like medicines. And at the very 11th hour, the very end of his life, he still wouldn't take medicines. He was obstreperous. You couldn't get this guy to take medicines, yet he owned a pharmacy. He'd sell you medicines. You know? Because that was not his dharma. That's what I'm saying. Now, no one else has said this that I've heard, but I'm saying that was not his dharma. His dharma was what he became later, around 60. Well, there's a late bloomer for you. And we've all benefited from his late blooming. It's all a journey. It doesn't matter. Don't sit in your life and look back, oh my God, you know. I regret this. I shouldn't have done that. And then I did this and that. Don't worry about all that stuff. It doesn't matter. Honestly, it doesn't matter. Just remember what it taught you. What did you learn when you look back? Sure, sometimes it takes a while. You need a little time. Then you look back. Oh, God, yeah, okay, now I see. I wish I would have seen at the time, but you didn't. But you see now. That's good enough. Don't regret. Oh, God, wasted so much time. Did you waste? No. You didn't waste if you see now. You didn't waste. It's not a waste. You could have handled it differently. Stop beating yourself up, please. It doesn't help. Forgive. Let go. So, at age 66, before that, he tried to start the League of Devotees in India, which was a national, he wanted it to be an international organization around the world, the League of Devotees. But the Indians were not really interested. Couldn't get it to stick. Yeah, he had a few people getting together for a little sadhu sangha from time to time. But, you know, he had this vision, and that wasn't, and then it would fall apart. You know, people would be interested, then they'd be disinterested, and he'd have a place to do it, then he'd lose the place. And anyway, he tried. He tried for a long time. He took sannyas. I can't remember what age. Do you know? What age did he take sannyas? 56. Was it that young?
59.
59?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That means he became officially renunciate. He left the family at that time, and became a sage, a renunciate, a person who walked alone, essentially, through life. He, at 66, he translated and printed the first three volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam into English. Sanskrit, he does the word-for-word, most scholarly presentation of Indian philosophical Sanskrit literature, pretty much, on the planet. I used to be in charge of his Sanskrit department. I worked on the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Srimad Bhagavatam for Prabhupada when he was here. All of those books are in every major library in the world, and every major university library, because that is the level of scholarship and presentation that was achieved by Prabhupada. But they never gave him the BA officially. Brilliant man, brilliant man. Okay. At age 69, he jumped aboard the Jaladuta, the water messenger, steamship or cargo ship, bummed a ride from Srimati Morarji I want to go to America. Yes, Swami. Yes, you want to go to America. You're an old man now. Stay in Vrindavan. Don't go. You will not like it there. Do you have any money? No. You will not like it especially. America. So finally he convinced her to give him free passage on the Jaladutta cargo ship. They gave him cargo boat, so he got one of the little cabins made out of iron or whatever they're made out of in a cargo ship. And off he went to land in Boston Harbor and then to go to New York. On the way he had how many heart attacks? Not heart attacks, yeah. Two heart attacks on the way. Two heart attacks. This is not even dealing with the seasickness when the boat was going up and down in the middle of the Atlantic. That was prior. Then the heart attacks came. He did not know if he would survive the trip. He had a trunk of the books that he had translated into English, Srimad Bhagavatam. He had his japa beads, a few clothes, and $7 US. Oh, you can get a nice hotel for $7 in the US, not a problem. Nah, I don't think so. And he had an introduction to stay with an Indian family. I think in, was it Butler, Pennsylvania, initially. That's what he had. 69 years old, never been to America. Would you do that? If you told anybody you were doing it, your loved ones, what you're going to do, you're sitting there, you're 69. I'm going over here, such and such. I got $7. I got somebody's phone number in my pocket. Uh-huh. If you live in Ireland, they put you in John of God's. They just, you'd be gone in no time. They put you in the place they put you when you're not stable. Let's put it like that. So that's why the woman that owned the steamship line, she didn't want to see him go. She felt responsible. Anyway, he went. Did he make it? He made it. He survived the heart attacks. Then he went, he got to New York and he lived in the Bowery. The Bowery is like Skid Row. It's the lowest of the low of the low. It's full of alcoholics and drunkards and I don't know, I guess drug users, I don't know how many drug users are back then in that day, but Bowery was pretty low. And that's where he lived for the longest time. He did. There were people he met that helped him from time to time. On the ship he wrote, "Today the ship is plying very smoothly." That's nice. "I feel today better, but I am feeling separation from Sri Vrindavan." For the longest time he lived in Vrindavan, Krishna's birthplace, before he came to America. He had been there for actually several years. And that really became his home. He stayed in the Radha Damodar temple. It's still there today. And they still keep his rooms for him in perpetuity. And he said, I'm feeling separation from Sri Vrindavan and my Lord Sri Govinda, Gopinath, Radha Damodar. These are the different deities of the different temples in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a small village. It's getting a little bigger these days. It was when I was there in 76 for the first time. It is a village of 5,000 temples. Everybody in Vrindavan is Krishna conscious, is God conscious. It's a pretty amazing place. Now it's gotten a little more commercial and a little bit more materialistic over time, to tell the truth. But back then, even in my young age, what a place, so potent, so pure. Anyway, he says, "My only solace is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the book which he was reading, in which I am tasting the nectar of Lord Chaitanya's Leela. I have left India. Does he call it India? No Indian calls it India. Bharata Bhumi. So the land of Bharata. That's what the Indians call it, Bharata. Just to execute the order of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, my guru, in pursuance of Chaitanya's order. I have no qualification. He says, I have no qualification. Well, I know you got no money. And I have no qualification. But I have taken up the risk just to carry out the order of His divine grace. I depend fully on the mercy of them all, so far away from Vrindavan, far away from Krishna. September 10th, 1965. Okay, so enough history. Now I'm going to tell you some anecdotes from some of my god brothers, god sisters, maybe one or two from me. Prabhupada finally established a storefront. It was actually a little shop on one of the big streets in Manhattan. And he had some regulars coming. It was a little shop with big windows like shops have in commercial areas. And above the door was a sign, Matchless Gifts. That was the sign. So it was a little gift shop called Matchless Gifts. Well, who had the matchless gift, the gift of them all, that was matchless? He did. Somehow or other. So that's where he began, and he would give his classes and do the chanting, and he'd cook prasadam. He'd cook Indian-style food and then offer it to Krishna. And once it's offered to Krishna, it becomes spiritualized because God has accepted it. And when you eat it, it actually removes negative karma. We're going to give you an experience in that a little bit later. And chanting, dancing, feasting is the program here, pretty much. The fast way back to Godhead to clear the old conditioning, the negative conditioning, the materialistic thoughts, desires, and contamination, to purify the mind, the heart, and reach the soul. So he would cook. Did a lot of cooking. A lot of cooking. Delicious. Delicious prasadam. So that's what he did. And one evening he had a stroke. So now he's what? 70. He had a stroke. At the time he had the stroke, he was sitting and he was teaching class. And he was teaching from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. No, sorry. From the Bhagavatam. He was reading the story of Prahlad Maharaj. And he was explaining the story. Prahlad Maharaj was a pure devotee, a devotee of Narasingadev. Another expansion of Vishnu. Beautiful story. And he had a stroke and he collapsed. Fell over. He was in pain. Now, what would you do if you had a stroke? You'd ask him, call an ambulance. Somebody call an ambulance. Dial 999-911. Quick. Get a doctor. Bravo, we'll call an ambulance. No. like this. He said, lift me. And he kept teaching. He kept telling the story. He kept quoting the Sanskrit. And the boys would take turns. One of them would prop him up. Because if he didn't hold him, he'd fall over. Who does that? Who? Do you know? What if you had the struggle? Would you do that? I don't think so. That's what he was doing. And the devotee, Govinda Dasi, who was a friend of mine, wonderful devotee, right from the beginning. Beautiful spirit. She says, even though he was clearly suffering and at a very critical time, hovering between life and death, he didn't care. He didn't care. Oh, wait, I might die. And? What else is new? For sure, I'll die. Today? I don't know. Maybe. Obviously, he's ready. He's reading Bhagavatam. What else should he do? Right? Then she says, he only cared about teaching us. That's all he cared about. She said, she was deeply affected at that moment and realized a lot of things. How much he loved us. I'd never seen such selfless, pure love before in my lifetime. Once Prabhupada gave a lecture, anyway, he recovered from the stroke. He recovered. He always recovered. Yeah. So, he gave a lecture, and near the end of the lecture, during the lecture, he kept emphasizing, we must become 100% Krishna conscious. You must become 100% conscious of Krishna and connected to Krishna, to God. And then he ended the talk. And the devotees were all like, how in the world are we going to be able to do that? I mean, oh God, that's going to be impossible. We won't be able to do that. And then they had a Vyasasana. This is a Vyasasana, this little seat. But this was a big one with like 3 steps up. So he looked at the devotees and they were kind of somber. And he stepped off, he stepped down to the first step. And he looked up at him and he says, even 90% God conscious, Krishna will come and take you back. Eyes brightened. Then he went down to the next step. Even 80% God conscious, Krishna will still come and take you. Then he came all the way down to the floor and he took his chadar, chadar? In English? Poncho. Poncho, yes, good enough. His chadar, his wrap. He threw it over his shoulder and as he began to walk away, he looked back at what he said. Even 70% God conscious, Krishna will still come and take you. Jai Prabhupada! So, it ended on a positive note. So, this is a great story. Prabhupada had translated the Bhagavad Gita, which is spoken by Krishna to Arjuna. We have Bhagavad Gita here. We have many, many, many copies available, don't we, Manu? Many copies. If you don't have one, Haribol, thank you. I buy them by the box full and give them away. You must read Bhagavad Gita And that's if you're a devotee of Krishna, that's what you will get. The story about Krishna and Arjuna. So he translated it as a person who is a devotee of Krishna. And he needed to get it published. He wanted to get it published. So Allen Ginsberg was a very famous guy in New York. He was a famous member of the counterculture. We used to call it also the counterculture. To you, it might mean the 60s. Well, I'm a child of the 60s and went through all the stuff that the 60s means. And that's when there was a huge awakening in consciousness and expansion of consciousness, not only in... more or less it began in San Francisco, in California, and also in L.A., also in New York, but it spread around the world. So Allen Ginsberg knew a lot of people. He loved to chant Hare Krishna. He helped Prabhupada in a number of ways. He was quite famous. And he was a poet. He was a poet. That's what he was. He wrote poetry. He had a publisher. So he tried for 6 months with no luck to get Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita published. Then another devotee tried. He sent it to academic publishers. They were not able to get it published. And then one day, Brahmananda, who is our one God brother, who was one of the first people to be with Prabhupada from the beginning, he's still around. He used to help Prabhupada with his mail, answering his mail. Prabhupada would dictate and he would type and he'd do secretarial stuff. And they received an order for this recording Prabhupada had made called the Hare Krishna record, where Prabhupada was chanting Hare Krishna. And then they made one record. And that was the first one that was made. And there was an alternative radio station, like, what do you got here, a pirate radio station or something, or other alternative radio station, who'd play this recording 10 hours a day and just Prabhupada chanting Hare Krishna. I'd say they were way ahead of the curve on that one. But so this guy, somebody sent a request with a check, please send me this, a copy of the record. And it was on Macmillan Publishing letterhead. Macmillan was one of the biggest publishers in the world at the time. They had their head offices in downtown Manhattan. And Prabhupada said, look, Prabhupada, it's on Macmillan letterhead. It's Macmillan, the big publisher. Uh-huh. Okay. Prabhupada said, yes, what we will do with this, you will go to Macmillan. You will bring the record. You will give it to this man here, this gentleman. And then while you're there, you will see if we can get the Bhagavad Gita published. And he said, oh, okay, Prabhupada. Brahmananda says, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know which way to turn. I didn't know. So he got on a suit, put on his business suit, and he went to Macmillan. He found out the guy that won the record. He delivered the record to the guy in the accounting department. He said, oh, my God. Accounting... he's not going to make any decisions about publishing. He's just keeping track of stuff. So that's what he felt, you know. Then all of a sudden, as he's sitting there with the accountant, who was very happy with his record, the door opens and in walks another gentleman, and the accountant introduces him as the editor-in-chief at Macmillan. You're joking. Nope. There he was. Senior editor. And Brahmananda stands up, shakes hands with him, looks him in the eye and says, I have a Bhagavad Gita to publish. And the editor says, a Bhagavad Gita? Yes. By a Swami? An Indian Swami? Here in New York? He wrote it himself? Is it complete, the entire Bhagavad Gita? Brahmananda said, yes. Yes, 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 and yes to everything. It's complete. And the editor said, that's exactly what we're looking for to fill out our religious section. We've got the Quran. We've got something on Buddhism. but we don't have a Bhagavad Gita. We will publish it. Did they read the manuscript? No. Did they read a sample? No. He asked Prabhupada, let me bring the manuscript with him. No. Don't bring it. Just ask the right person. So that's when he got the green light for the publishing. Of course, they got the manuscript and everything went. Macmillan was, how many Bhagavad Gitas is it? Do you know how many Bhagavad Gitas in that Macmillan edition were sold? At this point in time, they're in the millions because they've been, Prabhupada's translation is in so many languages now around the world. So there you have it. So Brahmananda flew back to the ashram and told Prabhupada, they will publish your Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada said, yes, I know, thank you. What we used to say, or we still say in the ashram, is it is Krishna's arrangement. Krishna has arranged it, has ordained it. If it's meant to be, or we say too, as you know, you say, if it's meant to be, it will be. If it's not meant to be, there's nothing you can do to make it happen. Correct? We all know that on a whole other level, don't we? This is a beautiful story. Sudama was a good friend of mine. Sudama Swami, he is a black man. His family served, I don't know how many generations of presidents in the White House. They were the house servants, black family, way back. So that's the family he came from. They're also very artistic and creative, song and dance guys. And Sudama was a very lovely, lovely, gentle soul. Very refined soul. So Sudama came when he was like, I don't know, 18, 19. He came to Prabhupada. And for a while he was one of Prabhupada's assistants or servants. And on a particular day, this was in, I'm not sure honestly where it was in America. Sudama was a fairly new devotee. He hadn't really read anything. He was chanting Hare Krishna, eating prasadam, and listening to lectures, and, you know, doing the kirtan and everything like we all do. But he didn't know a lot of philosophy at that time. He was new. He was young. See, Prabhupada has a nap in the afternoon, traditionally. So he was coming in after Prabhupada's nap. He knocked on the door. He was going to bring him in a little drink and a rasgulla, a little Bengali sweet. And he walked in the room and he said, in the room of Prabhupada's room, the window faced the backyard of the house, as you would say here, back garden. He said the whole room seemed to shine with a purple and gold glow. There was an amazing energy in the room. And Prabhupada was quietly chanting and crying tears of ecstasy coming down his cheeks. Sudama became alarmed and backed out of the room and went to Govinda Dasi, who I just told you about a moment ago, and asked, what's happening? Is Prabhupada okay? Is he having a fit? She said, no. He's fine. She didn't go in. He's fine. He's having a relationship with Krishna. That's what he's having. She said, this is Krishna consciousness. This is love and devotion with God. Sudama said, wow. Then, a few few minutes later, he went back in. And Prabhupada was still sitting, chanting, crying, quietly. And Prabhupada said, "Sudama, don't leave. I'm crying because of the mercy of my Guru Maharaj, my Guru. By his mercy, I'm allowed to see Krishna. I can see him." As he looked out the window, he said, "I see him right now, over the grass, right there. He has appeared." And Sudama said, "It was so intense, the whole atmosphere, I started to cry." Prabhupada said, "Why are you crying?" Sudama said, "Because you are so powerful and so merciful. I've never met a soul like you before." Prabhupada said, "That is Krishna's arrangement." When I was 19 or 20, I had my awakening. Then I had a house. I got my own house. I didn't buy the house. I rented the house. I think it was like $70 a month. Tell me if you can find one in Dublin City Center for that, okay? Nowadays. They were producing spiritual sky incense, as they still do nowadays, with spiritual sky incense. And I lived right in the middle of Canada in a city called Regina. I mean, this is the city, when you fly across Canada, it's the one you always avoid. You fly right over. Are we going to that one? No. There's nothing there for you. Just keep going. Toronto, Vancouver, yeah, Montreal. So we're right in the middle of nowhere, no man's land, agricultural area. It's a small city, 100,000, 150,000 people, very small. So if you wanted anything, you had to order it by mail, by post. So I ordered spiritual sky incense because I've been going through my awakening into yoga and meditation and Eastern philosophy, which I was magnetized by. So I'd order spiritual sky incense. And I burnt... No, I didn't order... I saw some of that in shops. But then on the packet it said you could order the Radhakrishna Temple album that was produced in London by the devotees. I said, "Oh, I'm going to order that." Then I ordered that. And I was listening to all the chanting. Well, I would listen to it day and night and night and day. It just put me in this whole mindset, you know. And then the next thing that came was read the Bhagavad Gita by this same person, Bhaktivedanta Swami. Well, where am I going to get that? Got to order it. Don't have it in the shops. I ordered it. It came. That summer, I read the Bhagavad Gita when I turned 22, and it changed my entire life. I'd go down to the park. I read Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes I had a little rubber dinghy. I paddle out in the middle of the lake and I read Bhagavad Gita in the middle of the lake on my rubber dinghy in the beautiful sunshine. That was my summer. And everything changed. And I thought, oh my God, here I am in the middle of nowhere, Regina. How do I get any access to any of these people? No one ever comes here. They didn't. Big, you know, singers and big concert acts. And they never came to Regina. So, one day I walked down to the city center, downtown. On the corner are two Krishna devotees in saffron robes handing out incense. There they are. They're standing there. Well, that was that for that. I went and met them. We got the big blue bus here. Come on to the big blue bus. We'll make you some prasadam. Yeah, when am I going? How about tonight? Perfect. What time? I'll be there. So I went with my girlfriend and I, and we went and we got on the big blue bus, and we had the most delicious food we'd ever had in our lives. They pulled out all stops for us. I didn't know what it all meant at the time, but God, it was wonderful. Now, then one of the devotees opened up a temple in Regina, and Krishna took five of us out of Regina, five souls. He sent the devotees, he even opened up a temple, and five of us became devotees. I thought that was a lot of to-do just to grab five of us, but it was Krishna's arrangement. So, that was my side of the story. And then when I became a devotee, I moved to Toronto immediately. Sometimes Prabhupada would be... he'd scold the devotees. Well, they needed training. They needed upbraiding too. Sometimes he'd scold them, but he'd say, always he did it out of love, always out of love, not ego. It was never a question of his ego. No one ever walked in and said, "What kind of mood is Prabhupada in today?" No one ever said that. You know how that goes a lot of times, right? What kind of mood's he in today? Should I go in and tell him? You see this at work? You see this at home? Yes or no? Oh, no, don't tell him that today. That's the last thing you need, right? That's because those people, God bless them, are not transcendental. You know, whatever the mood is, that's what's gripping them, and they can't separate one thing from another. So Prabhupada would say, he said, if I don't forgive you, don't worry. Krishna will forgive you. Prabhupada always forgave them. And if Krishna doesn't forgive you, don't worry. Radharani will forgive you. Radharani will always forgive you. Okay, I'll try to wrap it up here pretty quick. Prabhupada organized, he used to go from village to village. He always had this dream of going from village to village in India and chant Hare Krishna and have sankirtan, congregational chanting, and then cook prasadam and feed the prasadam to the villagers. And when he would do that, when he would organize it, people love it. They loved it, especially in India, naturally. Because it's part of the culture. So at one stage, they inaugurated the bullock cart traveling sankirtan party. So they had a cart, and it was pulled by two big bulls, two bullocks. And they were going, you know how fast that goes, don't you? That's pretty slow. But this is very common transport still today in India. You will see it. Even in the cities, very commonly in the rural areas, very common. For farming, but also for transportation. And so they asked Prabhupada to come and bless the bullock cart, and, you know, because they're heading off, they're going to go to their first village in Bengal, it was, at that time, I think. So Prabhupada approached the bullocks, he pulled some grass out of the ground, and he fed the two bullocks. He touched them on the heads, and their bullocks, they're big, I mean, huge, big horns, big guys. And he said, these bulls are carrying Gornatai. They had the deities, Chaitanya and Nityananda, on the bullock cart, the manifestations of God in deity form. And he said, they are pulling, they are carrying Gaur-Nitai for all to see. These two bullocks will go back home, back to Godhead. They will not have another life here in the material world. They are serving the Lord directly through the deity form. My friends, if two bullocks can go back to Godhead and not take another birth, what about you? A little service rendered to the deity, come and help the devotees, make a donation, whatever. Do something. Do something for God. Don't just ask God, what have you done for me today? Ask God, what can I do for you today? That's all. That's the whole mystery in all of this. In bhakti yoga, that is the mystery. I've told you the whole mystery. Treat God like a friend. How can I help you? How can I help you? Do you need something? If I asked you right now, I could really use a glass of water. Thank you, I have one. But if I looked at you and said, I could really use a glass of water, what would you do? Well, let me see if I can get that for you. Right? Wouldn't you? Anybody would. This is a beautiful story. Beautiful story. In Delhi, there's a wonderful devotee named Atma Tattva. He's a South Indian devotee. Lovely man. He was back this way back in the day. And they have a beautiful temple there now. It's a spectacular temple in Delhi. But this is long before that. And one morning after the morning program, when the deity is open, you sit and you chant in front of the deity. Atma Tattva was cleaning the temple room, sweeping up, cleaning up. And there's a man in his 60s there. And he said, are you a disciple of Prabhupada? And Atma Tattva, he's a young guy. Yes, I am. The old man said, I too want to become a disciple of Prabhupada. Indian man. And but they told me that I have to come and serve in the temple for 6 months before I can become a disciple. Because they want to see that you're sincere, you're serious, you're chanting, you're following the rules, and you know, you're not doing some other stuff that's not part of training your consciousness, you know. Practicing yoga. That's what they want to see. And then maybe you get initiation. So he says, but I cannot. And he lifted up his pant leg and his leg was all swollen. I didn't say what, maybe diabetes or something like this. I don't know. He couldn't serve. Not practical. He says, can you please ask the Swamiji if he will accept me as his disciple? And he says, you can go to ask him yourself, because in the evening he has darshan, where you can come and see him and ask questions, talk, whatever you like. Come this evening. So he came, and in fact, he was the first one there, and he brought a huge big plate of offering for Prabhupada, and made the offering, and with great emotion, he told Prabhupada, Swamiji, I want to chant Hare Krishna. I want to chant Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada said, yes, you can chant. Why not? And he had his beads with him, and Prabhupada said, reach for the beads. And he started at the head bead, and he started to chant, in each hand. Now what you do when you get initiated by Prabhupada, he takes your beads and he would chant one round on your beads for you, and then he would give you the beads and he would give you your spiritual name, Dikshanam. That's how it was done when it was in its earliest point, believe me, early on. That's how it was done. Prabhupada handed me my beads. I don't know if he chanted on them, and he gave me my name. He looked at me and says, "Chant Hare Krishna." I said, "Thank you, Prabhupada. Your name is Duryodhan Guru Das." And I said, Duryodhana Guru Das. I said, "Well, who is that, Prabhupada?" "Duryodhana Guru Balaram." Like this, he told me. I didn't know. So it was Krishna's brother, because he taught Duryodhana in the Mahabharata how to fight with the club. So he was his guru. Warrior guru. I love it. So anyway, Balaram is the original spiritual master. Also. So anyway, back to the man. And Prabhupada showed him how to do it. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he chanted around the entire mala, all 108 beads, and he handed the beads to him. Did he accept them for initiation? Not technically. Not technically. But that's what happens when you get initiation. And he gave him the bead. And Atmatattva went with him. He's sitting there. "I can't believe it. I can't believe what just happened." Because that never happens. Even back then, it never happened. But it happened. Right? Atmatattva, and then Prabhupada gave him the beads back. He says, "Now you chant Hare Krishna." That's what Prabhupada would say. Atmatattva said he felt very blissful since the man had now been technically initiated by Prabhupada. Some months later, the man stayed in the guest house at the temple there. It was a guest house of some kind. He had a room. Some months later, Atmatattva visited this man in the guest house, and he had a huge picture of Prabhupada on the wall. The man had put up a photograph of Prabhupada. And he was sitting there chanting away, just chanting, looking at the picture of Prabhupada, his guru. Why was he looking at the guru, not Krishna? Because the guru is the via medium. He's the one that can take you to Krishna. So you can chant directly to Krishna and look at Krishna, but the guru is the key figure who will make your presentation to Krishna, if you will. He'll make your plea on your behalf. So anyway, he was looking at Prabhupada's picture and he was chanting. And then the second time Atmatattva went to meet him, I don't know when that was, he had passed away. He had died. And when they found him in his room, he was chanting. And they heard him outside the door earlier that morning, and he was chanting. And when they opened the door and found him, he was dead. And they could not get the beads out of his hand. His grip was too strong to get them out. And that's all he did. In the final week, he sat in one place, looked at Prabhupada's picture, and chanted. And the last thing they heard from walking past his room was this man chanting. And he died. So, okay, better end it there. Questions? Comments? Prabhupada's not gone. He's here. He's always here. There's one other story there where back in the early days they got an aerogram from India, and the devotees, this was in San Francisco or someplace, and they hadn't seen an aerogram come all the way from India. Oh my God, a letter from India. I wonder what's in it. All the young devotee girls, these are girls. Prabhupada, we see you got a letter, and the letter was open, and it was on his desk just a little later. Prabhupada, what, did you get a letter from India?
Yes.
What was in the letter was good news?
Yes.
Well, what did it say? My sister has died. They're looking at him. She was a pure Vaishnava. She was a devotee from the beginning of her life. And now she is with Krishna. Yes. Is very good news. We think death is a tragedy. Is it a tragedy? When you lose someone, it feels like that. It's a tragedy. It's a loss. It brings sorrow. Is it a tragedy? No. Not for somebody who's God conscious. That's the glory of becoming God conscious. You get this death business out of the way and you're transferred to the realm at which you properly belong, where the soul must go inevitably. Right? Makes you look at death a little differently. Prabhupada was always on the absolute plane. Sometimes people say, Prabhupada, my loved one's got cancer. Mm-hmm. Well, what should we do? Chant Hare Krishna. Get close to Krishna. But she may not live.
Ah.
Chant more. It's not a negative thing. It's a positive thing. If you look at it from the right perspective. Jai Gurudev, Jai Srila Prabhupada, Hare Krishna.
Thanks to Ariel and the group for